Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Teach Me to Code podcast. This is your host, Charles Max Wood, and this week I'm going to be putting up an interview that I had with Jim Jagielski from the Apache Foundation. He also works at Red Hat. He's the president of the Apache Foundation, and we sat down while I was at ApacheCon, and we had a discussion about the foundation, how it got started, how it works, what his involvement with it has been. It was really, really interesting. For those of you who are involved in open source software, the Apache Foundation seems to be just growing and growing and growing. But beyond that, it also seems to really kind of have it down as far as managing open source projects. So if you're managing an open source project, you probably want to take notes so that you can take advantage of some of the stuff that they offer there, or just do some of the stuff that they do on your own. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and turn the interview on. I'll catch you on the other end. Thanks. All right, so I'm sitting here with Jim...
Jagielski. It's a tough one.
You take one look and it's like, yeah, there's a lot of vowels.
That's right. It looks a lot scarier than it is. You know, yeah. It's definitely for sure. Yeah.
All right. So you're the president of the Apache Software Foundation.
That's correct. That's right. Yes.
And you also work for Red Hat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm a little bit curious. I'm not as familiar, I guess, with the Apache Foundation as I ought to be. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of my listeners are just kind of open source hacking means. I write a little library, put it on GitHub, and somebody will find it and use it, right?
Yeah, please, somebody use my software.
Right, and the Apache Foundation is a little more organized than that.
I would say a little bit more than a little bit more.
Yeah.
We tend to have extremely good processes as far as, you know, building communities around open source projects and building successful communities and successful software projects. You know, we started off at the very, very beginning with the Apache web server, and it was like, that was sort of like the open source project that we cut our teeth on, because that's mm-hmm. the one that really taught us that, you know, building communities, having an open source hacking environment where all developers were welcome to come in, making sure that it was easy for them to get up to speed with all the development was going on, because we did everything in the open, mm-hmm. used mailing lists for everything. So that was a really nice way for us to develop sort of like what we call the Apache way. And what we've seen is that method of creating open source projects draws in a lot of the best and brightest hackers out there.
Right.
You know, and of course the Apache brand itself is also very, very well known as well. Mm-hmm. So not only are we lucky enough and fortunate enough to be able to pull in really, really neat software projects, but a lot of the really, really good developers, you know, really are driven to say, yeah, I want to help develop this Apache project, whatever it is, whatever mm-hmm. You know, scratches my itch or tickles my back. I mean, that's what I want
right.
to work on.
So I'm a little curious then. Was the Apache Foundation formed around the Apache HTTP server?
It started off that there was just a loose group of us called the Apache Group.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until 1999 when IBM wanted to bundle the Apache web server with WebSphere, you know, the uh-huh. WebSphere application, you know.
Okay.
And we realized at that point in time that there, you know, they needed to be able to interface with some sort of legal entity. So IBM actually helped us incorporate the ASF in 1989. But the Apache Group and the Apache web server actually started in 95. So we were mm-hmm. this, you know, this loose, non-legal entity for a good for you know, almost 5 years or so before we incorporated.
Okay.
And so, you know, as I said, we've done that in 99. And when we did, the only two projects that we had on board were the web server and what we call the conference committee, which was a help to organize and help producers produce the ApacheCon conference, which we're, you know, in Vancouver right now celebrating
right.
the you know, 2011 version.
Mm-hmm. Which has been an incredible conference, and it's really been interesting too to meet all the people that are involved in, you know,
mm-hmm.
in all the different projects, and you know, it's fun to meet people who are so passionate about what they do and, you know, are really involved. So you formed this legal entity,
mm-hmm.
and then you started accepting other projects into
That's
the foundation.
Right. That's right. There were you know, some of them were just projects that people had developed externally, and they said, you know, we like the way Apache does things. We think it'd be a nice fit for the Apache Software Foundation, so they would come on board. Other projects were actually donated by, you know, large companies. You know, IBM, for example, donated, you know, the Axis project. You know, Sun, you know, actually donated the beginnings of the Tomcat servlet container. So not only were we pulling in projects from, you know, independent open source developers, but also companies saw the ASF as sort of like a nice, safe, neutral ground that they could donate significant open source projects to, knowing that you know, we were able to maintain a community, pull in developers, keep the project going. And like, as I said, you know, it's a nice neutral ground. So it provided a way where not a single company was controlling the development of this project. And that's very, very important in open source, is that there's no single driving company or corporate entity which is, you know, directing the development of an open source project or controlling the open source project. We let the community do that. We let the users determine where we want that software to go, you know, what features to add and things.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think I really like about the way that things are set up. And you can correct anything that I say here, because I've only been gathering this information over the last day or so. Because, I mean, I always assumed that the Apache Foundation just found developers and said, okay, you work on that, and you work on that. and then I kind of got to understand, okay, so then they had people say, I want to work on that, and so then they let them work on that.
Right.
But it seems like there's a lot more to it than that, where there's a committee that steers each project.
That's right.
Yes. There are project chairmen and VPs that manage each project.
Basically, the main idea behind the PMC chair or the VP, all they really are, they're not like the lead developer or the main guy who controls the development. Basically, their responsibility is to write every 3 months or so a report to the board that says what the project's doing.
Okay.
So it's more a task or a position of responsibility, the one of control or domination, you know, as you know, which is of course very, very different from, you know, with a VP, you think that, you know, he's got the, he or she has the final say, or their voice is more important, or their sense of direction for a project is more important. And that's certainly not the case. And we take it very, very seriously that inside that community, inside that that group of developers, everyone's vote, everyone's voice is is exactly the same weight, is exactly the same loudness. You know, nobody's you know, insights or votes are more important than other people. And we think that's very, very important to maintain that that sense of you can join an Apache project at any time. You know, you can show and show how good you are. You can make a lot of progress. You can earn merit, is what we call it. And by earning merit, you get a say in where things go. If there wasn't that that idea that all votes are equal and all people are on the same level playing field, then if you're someone who's just joining a project, you know that there's no way I could ever, you know, climb the ladder at the same rate that these guys would. So my voice would never be as important, and so you would disenfranchise having new people come in. By having this ceiling, it makes it very, very easy for people to come in and within a few months have, you know, a really defining voice, a defining say in, you know, where the project should go, what features should be in the project.
That's really interesting. How much influence does the Apache Foundation board have over these smaller committees?
Absolutely none.
You're just an organizing entity.
The Apache board is basically just there because we're what's known as a 501c3, a nonprofit entity. It's a part of the U.S. IRS tax law, and so we're a not-for-profit charity organization. So of course, to do that, you have to be incorporated, which means there needs to be this legal entity. And the board simply exists to maintain that legal structure associated with it. But the board does not have any influence over the direction of any of the projects. It's not as if the board says, oh, we think you should add this feature, or we think the next version of Hadoop or Tomcat or the web server should go in this direction. That's under the full control of the project and the project committee itself. The board has absolutely no say in that.
Okay. So how do people become part of the committee? Because it seems to me that being a committer isn't the same thing as being on the committee.
That's right. There's sort of like a process to go through. You know, first of all, we kind of like look at end users as part of our community. Now, of course, if you're an end user and you're using the software, then chances are very good you'll find a bug. Mm-hmm. Now, many people will just see the bug and complain and gnash their teeth and maybe, you know, hit the terminal screen or something like that. But there are
I'm pretty good at that.
Okay. But there are some who will say, oh, geez, well, there's a bug in here. And because this is open source, they can look at the source code. They can see what's causing the bug. Mm-hmm. And they'll look at it and say, okay, well, I found a bug. They'll report it to the ASF. And they'll say, oh, and by the way, I fixed it. Okay, that for us is someone who's just starting that journey into becoming what we call a PMC member.
Right. Because they're getting involved.
That's right. You're getting involved. You're showing passion and interest in the project. Now, if you do that enough, if you provide patches enough, then what'll happen is that somebody will say, you know what, their code fixes are always great. They're, you know, mm-hmm. we never have to do anything to them. They're, you know, they're showing a lot of passion for the project. What we'll do is give them commit privileges, and that's where you become a contributor.
Right.
And that actually enables you to touch and change the actual source code itself. Mm-hmm. Before, you would provide patches and someone would apply that patch on your behalf, but now you're able to do that directly. And then from that point, there's a short period of time where you show enough continued interest in the project that you become a PMC member,
right.
And that's the person, you know, and that's the group who has the say mm-hmm. in the direction of the project itself.
Right.
And the lag time between being, you know, a committer, contributor, and a member is very, very short, because we want to keep those people,
right.
You know, you don't want to just accept their patches and not give them a say mm-hmm. in what happens. You want them to get fully involved. And certainly they've proven themselves worthy. The whole idea of a meritocracy, which is mm-hmm. what Apache is that the more you do, the more you're allowed to do. So the very
right.
fact that you're showing yourself able to, basically voice an opinion and help the code base means that you're also giving a say in where that mm-hmm. goes.
That's really interesting. And I think it makes a lot of sense, because effectively then what you're doing is you're getting the people who are both talented and passionate enough to be involved to get involved.
That's right. That's definitely true. I mean, I'm a firm believer that I consider myself a developer, you know, are artists by nature. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, you know, programming and development is something that we're driven to do. And unfortunately, you know, when you're working for proprietary commercial enterprises, you're not able to show your talent. You know, you can't show people what
right.
you do. Whereas with open source, you are able to. You mm-hmm. have this avenue to say, you know, oh, look at this great, you know, this elegant hack I made, or this fix for a bug that's beautiful. You know, I mean, those mm-hmm. are the actual adjectives, you know, that
right.
you hear all the time. And so open source taps into that visceral connection that developers mm-hmm. have with developing code and seeing code improve and develop and things like that.
Right. Well, and it's interesting too, because in a lot of the programming communities, your contribution to open source is essentially your resume.
It really is.
It's becoming less and less that you gave them a piece of paper that told them what you did.
Right.
Because ultimately they don't want to see what you did. They want to see what you really did.
That's right.
And so they want to be able to pull the code down and say, okay, he did this. Mm-hmm. He added this feature. He fixed this bug.
Right.
He made this commit. And it seems like a lot of these systems, you know, whether you're contributing to the Apache Foundation or just putting your code up on something like GitHub,
right?
You know, effectively, you know, you're putting it out there where somebody can see it.
That's
and
definitely true.
If you want a great job, I mean, anymore, if you don't have something out there, a lot of companies I've talked to mm-hmm. won't even look at you.
That's right.
And the ones that will are going to say, well, you need to build an app that does X, Y, and Z. Here's the specification. Mm-hmm. Get it back to us in a few days, or don't bother contacting
right.
us.
Right. And in a lot of ways, and again, going back to the coding art kind of, you know, or craftsmanship, you know, your open source code, whether you, it's sort of like your portfolio mm-hmm. that you go and present to prospective employers.
Right.
So, definitely involvement in open source, I think, is crucial for the success of, anyone who's going mm-hmm. into software development, things like that. I mean, I've spent, several times speaking at different colleges and universities to their, computing science, classes, and just, making sure that people realize that, first of all, open source is a great way of honing your skills. I mean, mm-hmm. yes, there's the educational part of it as well, but there's only so much you can do by reading it out of a book or being mm-hmm. taught how to program. It's really something you need to do. And I really also firmly believe that because you're doing it in the open, because people are able to look at your code and provide feedback and insight to it, you actually grow as a developer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I consider myself someone who has grown in whatever talents I have, mostly because of the impact that other people have had on me, for the insight,
right.
the ability to work with incredible programmers and mm-hmm. being able to, to absorb some of that knowledge
right.
in the process of working with them. So in so many ways, open source is incredibly beneficial to people who are looking at coding and development as a career path. And the sooner you get into it, the easier it is, the more of a vast portfolio mm-hmm. you have to be able to share with employers. And the more you're sought after, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of times where, you don't even have to provide, as you said, a resume or a portfolio. They'll seek you out rather
yeah.
than you having to seek them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, nowadays, especially with the way, the economies are and stuff like that, that's a great place to be.
Mm-hmm. I also like that you kind of touched on the mentorship aspect of things where, you put the code out there, especially in some of these projects where you get these talented people.
Definitely.
And, so you're submitting code and you get that feedback. And even if it's a 5-minute mentorship where they're effectively just saying, hey, this bit of code, I would have done it this way and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Or, maybe it's a 5-month or 5-year mentorship, where you're on this project for so long that you become accustomed to working very closely with these intelligent individuals and getting their feedback that way. There's a lot of value in that.
Oh yeah, there definitely is. I mean, because we focus so much on the community aspect, you're really building a relationship with that person. It
mm-hmm.
it starts off around a particular piece of code, but it grows become more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's also nice is that after a while of that happening, you realize that you've sort of like, the student has become the master.
Right.
And people will seek you out,
mm-hmm.
And again, it doesn't matter how old you are, I mean, what matters is the talent you have. And
mm-hmm.
so it's really, very, very common to see, people who are considered, quote, kids, or younger people mentoring people who are older they are. And there's nothing, and both sides are happy with that, comfortable
mm-hmm.
with that. So mentorship, always seems to imply sort of like a difference, that the mentor is always older and more experienced, and that seems to imply that they're older. That's certainly not the way it is.
Right.
It's very, it's a great sort of like a apprenticeship that
mm-hmm.
happens. And you do grow as a person, you grow as a developer and a coder, and then you're able to pass that knowledge along
mm-hmm.
as well.
So my next question is more along the lines, because you keep bringing up these principles, and I've heard people talking about them too, like community over code,
mm-hmm.
or the other one was the meritocracy.
Right. Yeah.
So what are some of these principles that kind of the guiding principles for the Apache Software Foundation?
Yeah, we kind of like lump them all together in a phrase that we call the Apache Way, and it's just a sort of like the lowest set of methods that we have come up with that enable us to as a foundation and as a group of developers to create really good healthy code. And the first one is the idea of community over code or community created code. For example, just say there's a group of 10 people who are running, who are creating this software project, and one is an extremely talented individual, but their social skills are really, really bad. They, they complain about every patch that comes in. Nobody's code is good enough.
The users are idiots.
Right, the users are idiots.
I've seen a lot of these,
any new
yeah.
developers are idiots. That's what we call, in the open source area, a poisonous person.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that you're turning off You know, anyone who wants to develop open source is doing it because they want to, because they're volunteering towards it. You're not going to go and volunteer your skills to a project where you're constantly being berated by someone. So it's turning off.
It's the same thing with a job.
Right.
That's you work with somebody like that. Same thing.
Right. So. Within the AS, but they're a code monkey. I mean, they're just like hammering out code like crazy. Well, in some areas, like in corporate, environments, they'll say, that person is a pain, but he's really pumping out the code. We'll isolate him somehow. Within the ASF, they're actually encouraged to leave because what they're doing, they're damaging the community. Because what will happen is that maybe that person's interests go away. Mm-hmm. Now you've got this community of people who, have not really been active in the code because they've been berated. You don't have any fresh developers in because they've been pushed aside, and chances are very good that code base will actually wither away and die. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of the unhealthy actions of an individual. So for us, it's important to maintain a healthy, warm, inviting community mm-hmm. where developers feel very welcome to join, that people enjoy working with everyone inside there, because that ensures that the code is very, very good, but also because we're all volunteers, as people come and go, the project will keep on going, the project will keep on moving, because there's always a healthy community supporting it. Mm-hmm. Rather than being dependent on one or two people, you have an entire community involved in that. So that's very, very important for us. In fact, it's one of the cornerstones of what we mm-hmm. call the Apache Way, mm-hmm. is that community over code part.
Right. And then you also have the meritocracy. And it seems like it goes even beyond a little bit the project. And, the more people contribute, they can actually move into, more important roles within the foundation itself.
That's right. That's definitely true. Yeah, I mean, it kind of like, does filter a bit into that legal part of it. The whole idea behind meritocracy is that you govern by merit. So as I said earlier, the more merit you earn, the more merit you get. So the more you do, the more you can do, and the more kind of like you're required to do. Mm-hmm. So you don't get merit by who you are or what company you work for. It's based on who you are, what your contributions are as an individual, mm-hmm. which is again very, very nice. But that does kind of like, so what will happen is that if you've proven your merit within the development community, then you're actually invited to become a member of the actual ASF, the actual mm-hmm. nonprofit corporation, of which right now there's about 390 or so members mm-hmm. of the ASF. And these are people who have made significant contributions to the foundation as a whole, and of course, especially to many of the projects within there. And so they're invited to become members. And then the membership has the opportunity to elect every year a 9-member board. Mm-hmm. So we'll run elections to say, okay, this person, aligns with my view about what the ASF is. I would like to see him or her on the mm-hmm. board. But again, it's not based on who you happen to be working for or anything like that. It's based on whatever merit you've earned during that period of time.
Right. So they're just regular people who have contributed in one way or the other.
Regular people who have contributed and not, no one within the ASF is paid by the ASF for what they do. Which is very, we are really a volunteer-based organization. The PMC doesn't say, okay, we need 5 people, let's go ahead and hire 5 people mm-hmm. to do this development. Instead, what will happen is they just create an environment where 5 people from the outside want to join the projects and do it. So it really is, as you said, a volunteer-based organization mm-hmm. that people do what they do and work towards it because they have this emotional connection to the code that they're working on and the foundation and really the impact that the foundation open source has made to commuting in the world in general. I mean, when you're able to see countries like Sri Lanka very, very quickly recover from tsunamis and earthquakes and things like that by leveraging open source, mm-hmm. and they're able to very, very quickly put up websites and to track people who are missing and things like that.
Right.
As cliched as the term world changing is, open source has done some really world changing things. Mm-hmm. And so as a developer, but also as a human being, I can't think of anything more fulfilling than saying, yeah, there's a little part of me that helped make all that stuff happen.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So we've talked about community-created code, mm-hmm. community over code. We've talked about meritocracy. Are there any other key parts of the Apache way that we haven't talked about?
Well, the one thing that kind of goes into the whole meritocracy, and I kind of like referred to it earlier, was that everyone has equal voices. You know, uh-huh. it doesn't matter if you've been working on the project for 10 years or 1 month. You know, your voice has the exact same say. You know, mm-hmm. you're not your vote isn't more powerful than anybody else's. Which we think is very, very important. We call that, you know, that's a, you know, a peer-based review. It's also very, very important to us, again, to make it easier for new developers to come on board, that pretty much all our development is done on mailing lists. Mm-hmm. Now, nowadays, with things like Etherpads and wikis and IRC, that may seem so 20th century. Mm-hmm. But the reason why is because if you're using those kind of techniques, first of all, there's no history associated with it. You can't go back and say, right. okay, what did it look like, you know, a year ago or 5 years ago? So you lose sort of like mm-hmm. that tribal knowledge that's associated with projects. But the biggest thing is that most of those techniques are in real time. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, the vast majority of Apache projects are widely diverse, you know, distributed worldwide, if, for example, you were in a time zone such that all the fun stuff was going on while you were asleep or while you were at work or something like that, you would be really disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. Doing all the work and all the development work on the mailing list means that everybody's on equal footing. It's very, very easy to come up to speed on what's going on. Mm-hmm. You can not follow the project for a couple of weeks and then go through the mailing list and see what happened. It doesn't disenfranchise anyone. It makes it, right. everybody's on the same equal ground. Which we think is very, very important. Not only for people who are existing developers, but also especially for the people who are thinking about joining a project, because mm-hmm. they have this vast history, this vast historical knowledge of, why the code looks the way it has, how we resolve mm-hmm. decisions, what the problem was and why we chose a specific solution. And it's always there, and they can always feel like they can make a real impact and a real insight into the direction of the mm-hmm. code.
Right, and I think that's interesting too, because I mean, we talked about the project management committees, or mm-hmm. you know, where they actually vote and say this is the direction. You know, if you want to be involved, you join the mailing list, you immediately have a voice.
That's right.
You don't have a vote per se, mm-hmm. but if you contribute some thought that mm-hmm. actually has merit, then it may be considered anyway. It may not matter that you don't vote.
But it's definitely true. I mean, there's a great anecdote that that Ross Gardner had mentioned in one of his talks. But there was someone who was on one of the mailing lists, and they were a lurker. That's what, you mm-hmm. know, somebody was just, you know, basically, you know,
they
following
get the mails,
the list,
but, yeah.
but they're not saying anything. And the very first post that he made on the list was what we call a -1 vote, which means mm-hmm. I don't agree with this particular release. And he gave the rationale behind it, why he thought that was wrong, and he said, this is a fix I think should happen. And sure enough, the fix was right, you know, and so even though this was a vote from someone that no one had ever heard about, the community stopped, looked at the vote, vetted the code, figured out, and then honored that person's say. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I mean, you know, you're immediately, once you join the mailing list, you have access to be a voice.
Right.
And the very fact that you don't, quote, get an official vote doesn't mean that your inputs or insights are discounted in any mm-hmm. way. Because, you know, obviously there are going to be things that skip other people that, you know, we can't see in the code, you're too involved with it. And again, we want to make sure that people feel extremely welcomed into joining these
right.
communities.
Absolutely. So I'm going to change tactics a little bit because I want to talk about the projects a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been talking about the people and how they get involved and, you know, kind of how things run. But one thing that I'm really curious about that I keep hearing about is the incubator.
Yes, yes.
And so my understanding is that, you know, a company like I just sat in on Fast Feather, which is kind of a lightning talk, I guess it was planned ahead of time, by somebody who was talking about Open Office.
Right, that's right.
You've also had PhoneGap recently join the Apache Foundation, and some of these other projects like Cassandra and stuff that I've heard come out of the incubator. And so the incubator sounds like it's kind of the way to get into the foundation.
That's definitely right, yes. I mean, you know, for a couple reasons. First of all, it doesn't matter whether the code is, you know, from three or four people who are developing code, or whether it's something that a company like IBM or Facebook or Google or Oracle wants to donate to the ASF. It all goes into the incubator, which is sort of like the entry point into the ASF. And the incubator basically serves two main functions. First of all, is to ensure that all the intellectual property that might be associated with that code is tracked. That you know, whatever code and patches and things like that, which are in that code base, we, the ASF, actually have, you know, the right to be able to license under the Apache license. So we want to make sure that, you know, we have the ability to do that. And that's a very, very important thing nowadays, because as ubiquitous as Apache software is, you know, companies know that if I use Apache, software from the Apache Software Foundation, it's gone through this very clear, careful vetting process. You know,
right.
So that's one thing that the incubator does.
So it's just legal protection for the foundation.
That's right. That's definitely true. The other thing, which is just as important, if not more important, is instilling in the projects those things we're talking about as far as the Apache way. You know, this is how you build community. This is how you ensure there's diversity in that community. This is how you vote on, this is how you achieve consensus on things. You know, encouraging people to use mailing lists and more and stuff like that. You know, and helping them build this healthy, sustainable community, so when they do graduate out of the incubator to what we call a top-level project, the project can grow and foster and just, you know, be as successful as all the other projects have been.
Right. It in effect, basically what you're driving at is that they meet the expectations of both the Apache Foundation and users of Apache software.
That's right. That's definitely true. Yes. Great synopsis.
Right. But also, yeah, you're showing them, look, this is the way that we do things here.
Right.
And if you want to be a part of that, or now that you are a part of that, you know, you're going to operate in this way.
Right. And you know, I mean, even though we think that we have, you know, the right answers to a bunch of the questions as far as open source development, you know, we don't claim to be a one-size-fit-all organization. I mean, you know, there are some people, you know, some entities that come into the incubator and, for example, may not like the clear, you know, requirement to use mailing lists, you know, or they don't want their software under an Apache license. They might want it under like a GPL license or something like that. Or, you know, they would prefer what's called a benevolent dictator type environment where one person's say is more important than another. Those are all, you know, perfectly viable and perfect ways of creating software and stuff like that. It's just not the way that we within the ASF have figured out a way to do it. And so there have been certain cases where people have not come into the ASF because of those conditions, or have entered the incubator and said, you know what, it's not really that right for us, which is fine, which is great. I mean, what we want is just to, you know, ensure that that projects grow and thrive. You know, we think we have a good formula for it, but it's not the only, you know, formula for it.
Well, and I can see where you're coming from, because I mean, some of these things, I've seen open source software that kind of has that benevolent dictator. And I mean, the guy's a great guy, and you know, he brings in the people he wants, and he builds it the way he wants, and and it works, and people love it, and people use it, and that's fine. But at the same time, I've also seen it where, you know, people think that they're a benevolent dictator, and then something goes wrong.
Right.
You know, whether that guy loses control of the project, or whether that guy, you know, gets picked up by some company that then decides that they own his software. Or, I mean, all kinds of things where basically it challenges either the openness or availability of, of the project.
Right, or the continuing nature of that technology. Because if somebody with that much say, authority, and for lack of a better term, respect, were to leave that community, would really leave, I think, that community in a shambles.
Right.
You know, and would they be able to recover? I mean, I'm sure they could, but it would take some time. The big thing within the Apache Software Foundation is that we want to be resilient to those kinds of changes by assuring that there's always a steady stream of new blood, as it were, to take up any holes or any slacks that may be inside, as people change positions and stuff like that happens.
Right, and it just makes sense that you're running it in such a way to where the community controls the code.
That's right.
As opposed to one person or one company, one entity, where then people are getting what they need from.
That's right. I mean, another thing that I don't think a lot of people know about the ASF is that when we originally started, we obviously focused on the web server, but the reason why we voted on the web server wasn't as an intellectual exercise. It was because we were users of that web server.
Right.
So it was important for us to maintain the web server software because we were using that web server software, either because of hobbies or because of businesses or something like that. And you see that in almost every ASF project, with almost every ASF developer, there is this very, very tight connection, this tight feedback loop between developer and user, because the developers are the users. You know, you're not just typing something and shipping it out, in which case, how much investment do you actually have in it? You're actually, creating software that you are using yourself, which means that you want to definitely make sure that it works correctly.
All right. So one other question that I have is how you got involved in the Apache Foundation.
I kind of started that very, very early on. There was the original 8 members of the Apache group, which started off when Rob McCool left NCSA to help start Netscape, and myself and a couple other people, after the original 8. Said, we've got some ideas on how to maintain this thing going, and it was back in, 95 or so. At the time, I was running a web hosting company and an ISP called Jagunet, and it was important for me to, maintain that software going up. And at that time, it was really just making sure that it was running on the operating system that I was, involved with, and then later on I got into adding features and stuff like that. So I pretty much got started from the very, very beginning. And then, as I said, after about 4 or 5 years or so, we became aware that we needed to incorporate. So myself, I'm one of the, there are many of us, but one of the co-founders of the actual foundation, and have been lucky enough to be able to serve on the board since we started, since 1999. So that's been great. So my history is pretty long and varied within the ASF. What's really kind of fun is that the project I started off with, the web server, I'm still actively developing that code, which is kind of nice. And there's kind of, nice just, myself staying with that and playing around with it, because I still, that's still, I wouldn't say my first love, but it's a great project. I mean, just today, there were a number of talks on HTTPD at the conference, and they were extremely well attended. So there's still a lot of people who are very, very dependent on the web server. And it's great to see that continue.
Yeah, I use it myself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey for me as far as my relationship to it too, because 5 years ago I was actually a Linux systems administrator, and so I was setting it up and configuring it and whatnot. And then to move into a place where I'm a web developer, and now I'm, hosting the things that I'm building with
right.
it, and so it's kind of an interesting change there. And then to see some of the features that have come into it since. I mean, I think one of the big ones that I've seen is just the mod proxy stuff.
Yeah, that seems to be a really, really key feature for a lot of people, because it started off with, you basically just say either had a web server and it was running PHP or something like that. But, with the architectures now, what's important is being able to have sort of like that central visible face of what your entire backend infrastructure is. And it's not just one web server, it's dozens and hundreds and thousands of web servers on the back. So you need to have that.
And they're all doing different things, and they're all,
That's right. So the proxy and proxying capability is crucial in that type of environment. And so we've been trying to you know, add the features and the performance that HDBD needs to handle that need. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sat in on a couple of talks this morning about it, and it's just really, really exciting to see where this can all go.
It is cool. It's cool being able to play with technology that way.
Yeah. So I'm a little curious, too. I kind of want to stick to the topic of the foundation, and then maybe we can talk about the HTTPD server another time. Mm-hmm. But the Apache license, mm-hmm. How is it different from, say, the MIT license or the GPL license?
Yeah, the Apache license is what we call a very, very permissive license. And it basically says that you can use the software any way you want. You just can't say that you wrote the software, that it's your software.
Right.
So if you want to take the software and bundle it into commercial software, that's fine. There's no restriction to that. If you take it and create another open source project, either based on it or forked of it, mm-hmm. that's fine as well. There's no restrictions on that. If you use it and you found some bugs in it and you have some patches, then you aren't even required to send those patches back. Obviously, we would love for you to send those patches back, but what's important for us is the usefulness of the code. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to use it, that's perfect. So anything else we get over and beyond people using our code is sort of like is gravy, you know, mm-hmm. which is perfect. Now, if you compare that to some of the other licenses out there, some require you to actually, if you do have patches for it, you must submit them back. And others are even so restrictive that if you create an open source or commercial software product based on that code, that it has to be also open source as well.
Right, GPL is famous for that.
That's right. It's kind of like called a viral license because the conditions of the license kind of like are catching. Mm-hmm. And so if you combine a GPL code base with a commercial code base, then the GPL kind of like hops on top and says, now this entire distribution, this entire derivative work has to be under the GPL. So of course, you know, a lot of commercial companies are somewhat hesitant about using GPL code because obviously they have some proprietary secret sauce stuff in some of the software and they don't want to have to give that out. You know, it's their competitive advantage. They're much more likely and look much more favorably over Apache type licenses because they're able to use that and not have to give away the keys to the kingdom just by using or leveraging open source technology. So we chose that license specifically to make it easy for businesses to use it. I mean, you have to remember that back when all this started, the web was just brand new. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was the real danger of people having their own different versions of what we call the web.
Right.
There would be AOL's version of the web and CompuServe's version of the web. And so it was very, very important to have an implementation of a web server that everyone could use, that was compliant with the standards, and so there wouldn't be any incentive for people to create their own version of it. And that's why we licensed the Apache server under the Apache license, mm-hmm. because we wanted to make sure that people used that and they didn't need to worry about building their own, and we were able to maintain the concept of a single web, mm-hmm. and by you know, basically giving away the infrastructure that created the web for free.
Right. Well, and it's really interesting too because, I mean, you're talking about software that was at least started, you know, what, 15, 16 years ago?
That's right, yeah.
And, I mean, I would guess that more than half the web still runs on it.
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean, you know, you look at some of the surveys out there, the Apache web server runs anywhere from 65 to 95% of the websites out there, depending on how you count it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Apache Software Foundation is much more than just the web server.
Right.
As I said, we've got like about 95 top-level projects, and it's pretty much impossible to find a piece of software out there that doesn't have some Apache code inside there. I mean, you know, pretty much any Java application will use either the Apache logging interface, mm-hmm. or the CLI interface or something like that. So there's Apache code all over the place. It's ubiquitous within the web and the internet and the cloud, really.
Right.
I mean, you can't, you know, if one day you know, all code that was ever distributed by the ASF went away, you know, the internet, the web, you know, the cloud would cease to exist.
Easy. Well, and certain aspects of certain operating systems.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, your cell phones wouldn't work. I mean, because, you know, there's Apache stuff, whether it's, you know, Apple's iOS or Android. I mean, there's Apache code inside. Yeah. They're doing something, mm-hmm. you know, maybe not running the entire thing, but performing some critical function that they were able to not have to worry about building themselves because mm-hmm. The ASF provides code that fits their need perfectly.
Yeah. So one other question I have is, I program primarily in Ruby,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't found an Apache Apache project that runs on Ruby.
Actually, there are two. One graduated a while ago. One's just graduated. LibCloud and Delta Cloud. These are two Ruby-based application, code bases that. Are there to serve different requirements in the cloud interface. LibCloud is sort of like a way of a standard library of accessing various cloud-related functions. It's all written in Ruby, so it enables you to you know, have a single interface into a cloud architecture and do things that you would normally do. Delta Cloud also is another complement to that. It basically mm-hmm. provides that single interface into it. Really, you know, those are the rare birds. I mean, certainly right. The vast majority of Apache code bases are written in Java. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, a couple C++ ones. Mostly Java. I believe there might be one or two Python-related ones out there, but in general, it's Java, and you know, a lot of libraries and things like that.
Right. You mentioned too that like those two libraries are connected or, mm-hmm. or complement each other.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of the top level projects do that. I mean, if you look at the Hadoop stack, mm-hmm. For example, I think there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7.
Right. Yeah.
You know, different libraries that are part of that do different things.
There's certainly projects which complement each uh-huh. other. There are even projects which, quote, compete with each other. For example, uh-huh. you know, Tomcat and the new Tomcat Open EJB combination called Tommy, are you know, or Java Servlet Container, or Java EE Server, Apache Geronimo is also uh-huh. You know, so. There, you know, and there's Apache Traffic Server and Apache HTTPD to mm-hmm. you know, web server reverse proxies out there. So, you know, they serve different needs. They're for different environments, but there's nothing wrong by having healthy competition, but also healthy complementary stuff on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unheard of for people to be developers and contributors on both of those projects, where they're competing with each other or complementing each
right.
other. So there's a lot of overlap between mm-hmm. there. We try to encourage that.
Yeah, well, and it's really interesting too, just because, I mean, you have this openness about it, so, you know, they compete, they have similar feature sets, you know, whatever it is, you know, but they have their communities,
right.
you know, they follow the meritocracy, they serve different communities, so they may go in different directions. They can
right.
do whatever makes sense for each
for
project.
That's right. That's
and,
right.
You know, there really is a lot of things, I think, that other open source projects could learn from the way that you do things here.
Thank you for saying it. I certainly agree. I mean, like I said, I mean, we don't claim to be the be-all and end-all. We think that we've got a good way for building communities and developing code. I think that we have quite a number of success stories. And what's really nice is that I've even gotten the opportunity to talk to other companies and organizations just on this Apache Way stuff, but not even related to software development.
Mm-hmm.
Things such as document storage and record keeping and how you organize communities around healthcare and healthcare concerns. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff that we talk about and we implement and we develop software can also be leveraged in other areas, not just IT and not
right.
just software development.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm really thinking here is more that you've taken into consideration a lot of things that open source projects don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as organization and how do we decide which direction this thing's going?
Right.
You know, it's not a flame war until somebody comes out victorious. It's,
right.
It's, you know, it's an active discussion, you know, getting the community involved and, you know, having that paper trail, so to speak, with the mailing list and
right.
things like that. And just, you know, kind of fostering that openness. And I think a lot of open source projects, they do terrific with the code,
mm-hmm.
but they kind of fail in some of these other areas. Not because they don't do it your way, but
right.
because they never thought of a way.
That's definitely true in certain cases as well. So there are people who haven't thought about it or don't give it as much credence or as credit as mm-hmm. as it needs to deserve. You know, and it depends on how you want to measure the success of open source. You know, if it's just measured by, the number of lines of code, committed each day, or stuff like that, then you're going to, try to manage that environment, that community differently
mm-hmm.
than what you're worried about a piece of software that lasts for decades,
Right.
And so, really that's what we're more about within the ASF is code that will be around whenever it's needed, that that people can depend on, rely on, because it's not going to go away, and a place that encourages new innovation to come in because they know that they can take advantage of that, and they can be the next big thing, and companies can then, and the entire infrastructure, the IT community can take advantage of that stuff. So it wasn't something that we realized
mm-hmm.
at the beginning. It's not like we all sat around together and said, this is the way to do it. It was just something that we were lucky enough to fall into. We were lucky enough to say, to operate under those methods. It wasn't until after the fact that we decided to actually document,
mm-hmm.
what we did. And of course, the incubator is a big part of that, is helping us to document that. Because even though the incubator has been around for quite a while, there are still some things that we take on faith that we need to make sure that people
right.
know about. But it's definitely important to think about it, or even if you don't think about it, after a while, sit and take stock of where you are, how you got there,
mm-hmm.
figure out what worked and what didn't work, and make sure that you can try to follow as many times as possible the things that did work.
Right. So one final thing that I want to ask you about, and this is something that came up. I was talking to Grant Ingersoll and Carl Wright, I think is his name, and they mentioned that there is some kind of corporate developer agreement that
mm-hmm.
they have to...
Right, right.
And I'm a little curious about that and how that all works.
Yeah, well, it goes back to the whole idea of intellectual property. For people, before people are able to get commit privileges, which again means they're actually able to, when they do an SVN commit, they actually update the actual official code, they're required to sign what we call an ICLA, an Individual Contributor License Agreement. And it's basically a piece of paper that says, yeah, this is my code, I develop it myself, and I agree that the Apache, that it can be relicensed under the Apache license, and the ASF can distribute code on it. So it's just a way for us to do that paper trail. Well, there are a lot of companies that have, inside of their employee agreements, certain terms that say something like, any development you do, like if it's on our system, or you do it at work, or even if you do it over the weekend, is our property.
Right.
And of course, that's very, very difficult if you're an open source developer, because you're not, you're doing it over the weekend, you're doing it before you
right.
go to sleep and stuff like that. So what we do is we have what we call a corporate CLA, which the company signs and says, yes, I know this person is active in open source, and that we agree that anything that they go ahead and submit as open source, we're fine with that. There's no
mm-hmm.
problem at all. We're aware of their activity within open source, and we allow them to do that. It doesn't mean that the individual no longer has to sign the ICLA. It just means that they also have some assurance
right.
that the company is okay with them working on the open source project. So
right.
it's a way of protecting the company, but also obviously the developers themselves.
Yeah, and that was something that I thought was just interesting, that You know, they're, I think it's an artifact of just the world these days. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, somebody can contribute something to an open source project, and then their employer decides that they own a big chunk of it.
Right.
You know, I'm just, it blows me away. It's like, you know, the guy wasn't at work. He didn't use his work computer, you know,
right,
yeah, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I've signed those work, mm-hmm, those agreements with employers.
Right. Sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, I will never do it again, mm-hmm, because I do plenty of other stuff in my spare time.
Right. Right.
But, you know, it's crazy. It's just crazy to me that there's all of this.
Sure.
And then at the same time, you have these intellectual property standoffs between these big, mm-hmm, companies that,
right,
you know, I can completely see how you would want to avoid that with right, this foundation.
That's definitely true. Yeah, but what's really good is that, you know, we really almost never have problems getting companies to sign that CCLA if, mm-hmm, if need be. In fact, there are some companies who will sign it basically saying, we don't care who in their company is donating code, we're fine with it. You know, which, uh-huh, is an incredible amount of faith to put into,
right,
you know, the ASF, but also in their employees. You know, it's a real sign that they value open source as a company,
right,
enough that, you know, they know that, you know, their developers may be playing around with it, mm-hmm, and they're okay with it. I mean, which is incredible. It again shows just how important open source is, not necessarily to just a small group of people, but to the entire IT, mm-hmm, ecosystem.
Right. Well, and you can definitely see that with some of these projects like Hadoop and the HTTP D server,
right,
and, you know, all of these different things. I mean, these are projects that are core to some of these businesses out,
right,
there. I mean, the HTTPD server is core to pretty much anybody who wants to load a web page on the web.
Right.
And, mm-hmm, so all of the Linux distributions are very interested in it, mm-hmm, you know, and a lot of these other companies that, you know, I mean, even if they just have a corporate web page and they're selling widgets,
right,
are interested in it.
Sure.
So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that they would be okay with that. I can also see some companies just refusing to have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the nature of the beast around here.
But things are getting better, and,
yeah,
you know, it continues to be getting better. And, you know, for people who are really pro open source, that's, you know, it's a good, mm-hmm, direction. You know,
yeah,
might not be happy with the speed it sometimes, but the direction's getting better.
Yeah,
and we're all for that.
So one last question. A foundation like the Apache Foundation, I'm sure, takes some money to run.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody involved is volunteers and not necessarily donating money but time,
right,
how does the foundation support itself? I, yeah, mean, is it ApacheCon that pays for that, or
ApacheCon is part of our revenue, but mostly what we have is the Apache sponsorship program,
mm-hmm,
and it's basically a way for companies to donate, you know, direct cash donations. Well, not cash, you know, not big bags of, you know, bills,
right,
in a bag, but you know what I mean. But they make you know, direct monetary contributions to the ASF at different levels. We have, mm-hmm, like, you know, platinum sponsorships and gold and bronze and stuff like that. And it's basically just a way of companies saying that we're behind the ASF, that we realize the ASF has bills to pay for things like co-location facilities and servers. And we do have two system administrators on staff, you know, because, mm-hmm, they're, you know, even though we have a very healthy infrastructure volunteer staff, not every volunteer wants to be woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, when a server comes down.
Been there, done
that. So that's why, yeah, you know, that's why you need to have, you know, you've got to dangle the money in front of people for that to happen. So, and, you know, it's important for those companies to make sure that we keep things running.
Mm-hmm.
But that's basically, you know, where our revenue comes from, is that we have, you know, the corporate sponsors from the sponsorship program. And people will send stuff in via PayPal, you know, small little odds and ends here and there. We've got some partnerships with book companies and stuff like that. Then anything Apache related will get a small percentage of the revenue coming in. We try to be as lean as possible. I mean, the foundation it always wants to be as lean as possible, not only from an, mm-hmm, overhead, you know, managerial point of view, but, you know, the foundation simply exists for the health and well-being of the communities. You know, when you start getting to the point where a foundation is chewing up, the foundation itself is chewing up resources, you lost the game.
Right.
So, you know, we do have some bills, but they're, you know, for the size of the number of projects we have, and is as active and as well known as the ASF is, our bills are really, really small because, you know, we're not paying people to do it, and we're keeping the foundation an extremely lean, sort of like hands-off entity.
Right. And does the board manage that, or do you manage that, or who?
We have a couple people who help do sponsorship, you know, sort of like a liaison for sponsors. We never, the thing is that, you know, it's kind of like the way we are. We never go up to somebody, knock on the door and say, would you be interested in sponsoring the ASF? It's always companies coming to us and saying, you know, what can we do to help the ASF out? And then we tell them about the different ways, right. You know, we also have companies who help us with donated, you know, hardware and stuff like that. But, you know, we're just not the kind of foundation that, you know, knocks on doors and asks for it. And we've been, you know, very, very lucky in finding, you know, companies and having companies find us who are wanting to do that.
Right. But I guess what I was asking was who pays the bills on your end? I mean, do you have some kind of foundation manager person that writes the checks?
We have basically a treasurer on board. He's one of the executive officers. But basically, he's just an Apache member who volunteers to be the treasurer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, same as our secretary, you know, same as myself as president, same as Doug as the chairman. We do what we do simply as a volunteer basis because we want to keep the foundation running.
That's really great. Well, I think I'm done with questions. I don't really have anything else I can ask. If people want to find out more about the Apache Foundation, where do they go?
Well, the quickest and easiest way is just coming to, believe it or not, we have a website. It's www.apache.org. In there, you'll learn all about the foundation. You'll see links to the over 90 top-level projects we have, and as well as, you know, FAQs and things like that about Apache, the Apache Way, the incubator that we talked about. And then, of course, on there you'll see mailing lists for all the projects as well. So if there's a project you're interested in joining, feel free to subscribe to the list, listen on board, and have your voice be heard.
All right. And if we want to find out what's going on with you, how do we do that?
I have a Twitter account. It's at JimJag, JimJag. I'm also on Facebook as well as Google+. You know, JimJag there as well. So feel free to follow along.
Yeah, we just connected on Google+.
Yeah, so. Cool.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. I just want to thank Jim again for coming onto the podcast. I really, really appreciate him and all of the great people that were at ApacheCon that were willing to sit down and talk to me. I have 4 or 5 interviews that I got done there that I'm going to be putting up over the next several weeks. And I've also met several other people that I plan on bringing onto the podcast from there. So, you know, keep an ear out and, you know, look into what's going on there, because there's a lot coming and there are really a lot of great projects over there that you can take advantage of in your applications. And some things that you can learn from some of these folks as they've worked through the problems in their different software domains. So, again, thanks, Jim. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can. My phone number is 801-367-6164. I'm happy to help you with Ruby on Rails or whatever you need. You can also email me, chuck@teachmetocode.com, and you can find me on Twitter at cmaxw. Now, one thing that I started this week is this thing called Ask Chuck. And the way that it works right now is that you have to add me on Skype. I'm on Skype as GigaChuck. So if you go ahead and add me, then what you can do is you can actually turn around and if you have a question, then I'm happy to answer that for a fee. Right now I'm charging $50 per question. If they're really, really simple questions, you can probably sneak 2 or 3 in for the same price, you know, for that $50. But if it's kind of a hairy problem that takes more than like 10 or 15 minutes to go over, then we're probably going to be talking about some coaching time as opposed to the Ask Chuck fee. But anyway, so if you have a question that takes less than 10 or 15 minutes to answer, then, you know, it'll cost you $50 to get the answer, but $50 may save you a couple of hours of research to get it figured out. So, that's what I'm offering and that's what I'm trying to do to help people out. It's really hard for me to, spare any time these days, just because I need to make ends meet around here. So, I'm hoping to change that. I have a few things in the works, but in the meantime, you know, that's what we're doing. So anyway, once again, thanks again to the Apache Foundation and to Jim, and we'll catch you next week with another interview. Thanks.